Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hi, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Your wedding is a day you'll remember forever. And your fiancé? Your fiancé deserves a suit that feels just as special as the moment you say I do. At Nick's, we've dressed over 20,000 wedding parties, and we specialize in helping weddings own their suits for about the same price as a rental. That means not only will your fiancé look amazing on your wedding day, but we'll have a suit that can be worn for years to come. Let us make this the easiest and most meaningful part of planning your wedding. Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
The Bills and Patriots wrap the regular season Sunday at 1 in Foxborough, and somewhere near the top of the Bills' priority list might be getting somebody a touchdown catch that does not have one yet this year. It was brought up by Allen himself on the postgame show. The Bills have 13 players, including Allen, for the Cooper lateral play, who have scored a receiving touchdown. That's technically how that goes down. And because we ask Sal, first Eric and now Sal today, leading with a tough one. Sal, if anybody can nail this, I think it's you. Would you care to handicap who the favorite or favorites might be to be this player, to be the 14th Bills player to catch his first touchdown pass of the season?
Okay, if I had to put odds on it, I'm going to start with Zach Davidson.
All right.
Tight end who I would think might get elevated here. I have to look at his elevations. I don't know if they've used three of them. That might be tough. If they have, then he wouldn't be able to.
He's appeared in two games.
Okay, so he's only been elevated twice. So I'm going to guess he's going to get elevated again in this one. So I'll say Zach Davidson. And then, hold on. Do you have a... I'm just looking at the stat sheet right now. Okay, Ray Davis has a couple. Ty Johnson. So I'm going to say, ready? Frank Gore Jr.
Oh, okay. All right. He gets the call. I would
think that he might be active too. I mean, elevate. But again, you can only get two elevations, so maybe not, right? Maybe he doesn't because you want, that doesn't work for me. I can't do that because Mike White's got to come up. Mike White has to be one of your elevations this week because Josh, as we know, is going to start, but you're going to want, you know, two quarterbacks after that available to play, I would think. I don't think you want Josh to be even like an emergency guy to go in. So,
okay.
All right, so let me just, Zach Davidson, and then, I think Frank Gore's on the list, and then who else would get there? The only two other guys, I guess, would be Jalen Virgil, KJ Hamler. I will say an outside shot of Alec Anderson.
Yeah, I was going to ask about Dawkins, but yeah, all right. How does it taste when New England is there in week 18 and the Bills are not playing their key guys, but they're still throwing touchdown passes to linemen, you know?
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Well, you bring up Gore. So two elevations is what you get. You bring up Frank Gore Jr. What do you think they do with James Cook?
It's a good question. I guess that would depend on, first thing depends on roster wise what they want to do with elevations, because maybe you don't even elevate Zach Davidson. They may want to elevate a couple of DBs here. You got Daquan Hardy to Corey Couch. They might want to see Lewis Cine actually play in some action. So that might be all bets off as far as those guys are concerned that I even mentioned. But as far as James Cook, even if he is out there, even if he is dressed, I should say, I'm thinking you're not going to see much of him, Mike. We just got off with Sean McDermott's Zoom call. He did confirm Josh Allen will start but play very briefly to keep the consecutive starts streak alive. I would think that that might also be the case for James Cook, if at all. If you see him at all, it would be very briefly. So I would imagine this is a Ray Davis, Ty Johnson game, and maybe even a Frank Gore game. Does Reggie Gilliam have a touchdown?
No.
He doesn't. He doesn't have a catch yet either.
There you go. There's another name for the odds, for the odds makers. Do you think the Cook chase, if you will, for the 16th rushing touchdown to tie the team record is important to the Bills or to Cook?
I would say yes, it's important. I think it'd be too tough to kind of chase in this one without risking anything. But sure enough, I mean, they could do it. There's no doubt. But I think that's one where, you know, Josh, you have control over that, right? You start Josh, you bring him right out. You don't have control over the James Cook touchdown situation. That could happen at any point, or it might not happen. And then at what point do you say it wasn't worth it to have him out there?
Well, the big picture, of course, is the 2 seed is locked. There's nothing here even in terms of having a conversation about who do you want to avoid or play, anything like that. There's not that. It's just simply one of these games where they can afford to take some of their guys out, which we know they're going to do. How big is this for you, Sal? It's not the bye. Like, they still have to play the game and then play the next week, but it seems like it's worth something.
Yeah, I think it's important to get a week here. This has been a grind. You know, you play 17 games. You're going to play 16, most of these guys, but 17 games for the team. And, you know, it's a grind to go through the season. You have bumps and bruises. And I know that you're still going to have to play Super Wild Card Weekend, but I rethink back to last year having to play Super Wild Card Weekend on the heels of having to play Game 18, and they had to go down to Miami. They had to win. Then they come right back. They play Pittsburgh, and a lot of guys got hurt in that game. And that really hurt them against the Kansas City Chiefs. The more chance you get for rest, I think, the better. So no doubt, I think it's important here. The ideal situation is what Kansas City has. You're the 1 seed. You can back off a couple weeks. And any playoff game you play is going to be at home. Well, the Bills have a chance to have 2 home playoff games. Maybe a third one if someone is to knock off Kansas City, right? But at least they do, to me, get a chance for 1 week to pull back a little bit, not risk guys getting injured, but they still have to play. You know, an important point I keep telling people, they only get 48 guys to play. You know, you can't sit everyone. This isn't a preseason game. It's not a preseason roster. There's not 90 guys out there, 75. There's only 48 guys out there. So you're going to have to play the game here with a bunch of players.
Just thought of this, and I don't want to forget to bring it up to you because I'm, you know, selfish, and I want to make sure you hear me, because even though this probably won't happen, maybe it will. I am predicting that the Chargers win 2 playoff games.
I like it. I like it. Well, if that's the case, then most likely they are knocking off both the Ravens and the Chiefs.
Or
because
the,
right now they'd be sitting in that spot.
Or the Texans and the Chiefs.
Yes.
Is more what I'm thinking, but it depends on what happens this weekend. They have to pick up a game on Pittsburgh, but,
yep,
you know, could happen. Pittsburgh home to Cincinnati.
Can we keep on this conversation? I like this because I asked Jeremy and Joe this morning this question, and I'll ask you then. Like, just from a, you know, chance to win standpoint, if you're the Bills and what you're looking at, if you take it through that prism and, you know, you don't want to see Cincinnati or whatever, however you feel about it, what is the preferable destination for where the Ravens are? And I say that because if the Ravens are the 3 seed, then you know you got to play them in the second round if they win. However, they may get the Chargers in round 1, which could knock them off. Or would you prefer the Ravens to actually drop down to the 5, and then if they win, they have to go to Kansas City in the second round, very likely?
Yeah, I haven't even considered that because they are like 3 touchdown favorites. Against Dorian Thompson-Robinson or maybe Winston. But sure, I guess that's better. The Ravens have the narrative problem that even the Bills don't have in the postseason. And if that's the Chargers, well, the Chargers won a playoff game there when Jackson was his first year as a starter and the MVP. And it's not like the Steelers are a picnic for the Baltimore Ravens. So
that's right.
You know, I think if I were they, given my history, I would be concerned about either one. I think the Chargers would be a concern for the Chiefs. They've played so many times, close games, a little bit like Dolphins-Bills maybe, but they've come very close to beating Kansas City. They've also done it, and the Bills just don't face any of this narrative stuff, really. Like, Denver has to be taken seriously and will, but of all these teams, would you be the next to say you'd be the least concerned?
Which team, the Chargers?
Denver for the Bills.
Oh, yeah, Denver. Yeah. By the way, Mike, I don't agree the Bills don't have the narrative stuff. It might not be the team. I think it's Sean McDermott. I think there's a lot of stuff that, you know, how many people and we hear from all the time that think it's Sean McDermott can't win in these situations. It can't beat a really good quarterback in the playoffs. And the only quarterbacks they've beaten are the backup quarterbacks. I think you hear that from the fan base. Now, I don't particularly agree. I think that, you know, they've put themselves in great position over the last several years, and they've run into some really good teams for different circumstances over those last several years. But I do think there's a narrative that surrounds the Bills when it comes to that because the head coach. I think it's a lot of that. I would also agree, though, that Denver would have been the second team going into last weekend that I say, okay, prefer the Bills to play. The first was Indy, Colts. And then we saw how that went right on this weekend. Yeah. Which, come on, what are you doing? Yes, I think out of Denver, Miami, and Cincinnati, the preferable outcome, if you're a Bills fan, to me, should be the Denver Broncos. Now, that could change if we find out that Tua's hip is very, you know, it's really going to cost him even the playoffs. Because there's talk he might not play again this week, and they need to win this week. So there's a situation going on there. But I think a rookie quarterback coming to Buffalo against Sean McDermott's defense and a team that isn't great at running the ball. They have a very good defense, by the way, but I think that that's a better recipe than a Miami team that knows you very well. They've come here in cold weather late in the season and almost won anyway, and a Cincinnati team, obviously, with Joe Burrow and all those weapons.
Of course you're right about the McDermott stuff. It's both key moments and just defensive efficiency overall in playoff games. But when it comes to Allen versus Jackson, Allen does not, his reputation is unflinching when it comes to postseason performances, you know, mostly. And Jackson's is quite not. Like, that's the guy where, like, the pressure is on again. Last year it was, and it didn't work out. Like, the pressure is going to be on again. And if it starts with Pittsburgh, I feel like he, as great as he is, can get in his own head. And that's a little scary for them. I don't see that happening here. I feel like Allen is going to keep trucking. And I think Baltimore could beat him. I think, you know, other teams could beat him. But I doubt it'll be because he falters.
Yeah, and listen, I even think, take a step further, if the Ravens were to come to Buffalo, and I'll be the first to tell you, I don't think it's a great matchup for the Bills. But I think the Bills would have a much different and better game plan to try and stop Derrick Henry and then force them to win with Lamar Jackson throwing the ball. And then, you know, you take your chances there. And for whatever that is, and I think he's been great this year, there's no doubt about it. I'm not telling you he can't do that. But I don't think it's an automatic, oh my God, the Ravens are coming here. They're just going to run for 250 yards and beat down on the Bills. I don't think the Bills would let that happen. So I give the Bills a better chance than I think what a lot of the narrative is about out there about that matchup.
Yeah, and some of that's in the fan base too, right? To your ears, is the extent to which the run defense gets criticized maybe a little much?
Yes. And you've talked about this with people. I've talked about this with people. And it's the reason. Listen, the run defense isn't like where you want to be. You always want to be better than, you know, what the statistics show. There's no doubt. Like, the run defense has been near the bottom of the league in yards per play against, and there's been some big plays and big runs. Even the Jets had some big runs. But what matters about the run defense is that that is happening in conjunction with the fact that the team isn't scoring points because you're constructing it that way. Like, the Bills have, I don't want to say they want teams to run on them, but they're inviting the run oftentimes and saying, we're okay giving up 4 yards a carry or 5 yards a carry even sometimes. We don't want to do it. But when it comes time for us to make a play, you're not going to be able to throw the ball to make the play. And when things tighten up in the red zone and we have guys closer to the line of scrimmage, we can stop you. And that's really kind of what happened on Sunday, actually, yesterday against the Jets. I mean, that's exactly what happened. The Jets ran the ball a little bit. They got down. And when it came time for the Jets to make a play, the Bills were the team that made the play. And that's kind of the way they've lived all year. What concerns me most about this defense, though, isn't really even the run game, the against the run. It's how sustainable is it to win and get all these turnovers they've been getting all year. It's great, and they're aggressive, and I love that, and they'll continue to be that way. But if they don't get a few turnovers, they got to force a team to punt or kick field goals, and that hasn't always been the case when they didn't get the turnovers.
Baltimore's so good running both Henry and Jackson, getting to the second level, and then it can be goodbye, you know, with those two guys. Mm-hmm. So that's the job there. I thought Breece Hall was a couple of inches away a couple times early in the game, but couldn't break him. You look at the stats on some of the possession stats, length of drives, and ultimately leading in points. The Bills have the best starting drive position in the league this year, 33.4. Takeaways is why. They're first in the league in takeaways. So a lot of those are going to tilt that stat. They are second in points per drive for the season, same thing. And then defensively, this is not just rush defense, of course, but for length of drives, 27th on the list. Number of plays per drive allowed, 27th in the league. Yards, 27th. Like, they have been driven on. Points, 18th. Again, takeaways have saved them in some of these. So it's not like their defense doesn't have issues, and we've talked already this conversation about their playoff history. It's something, but maybe they can overcome it.
I think it's funny. I think it's funny, Mike, when you look at like that. You're right, and I was looking at all this stuff today myself. And yeah, teams are running a lot of plays. They're taking off time. They're getting a lot of yards against the Bills, and then the something happens where that team doesn't score. The Bills get a turnover, whatever. And the opposite side is, that's the Kansas City Chiefs on offense. The Chiefs, we all say, like, look at the Chiefs' offense. It's just not explosive. It's not scoring a ton of points. They lead the league in plays per drive. They lead the league in time of possession per drive. But yet, they're not ending the drive with points. They're actually ninth in the league in 2.38 points per drive. Like, it's just kind of funny to me how, like, having these sustained drives sounds good, but unless you finish it off, it's not mattering.
Mm-hmm. Bills, one more. Turn the ball over so far this year on 4.9% of their possessions. They turn the ball over on you on 18% of almost one in five.
Amazing.
Possessions against the Bills has been ended in a turnover. Sal Capaccio on the West Her Hotline. What's the most hilarious thing about the Jets?
Oh, boy. Most hilarious thing. I don't know. But that Dan Fates video was hilarious yesterday. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I mean, they have that boombox was hilarious. It's fun. Like they're coming out with this boombox. And if I don't know if people saw it, Dan Fates from Rochester, he dubbed music. It was the Curb Your Enthusiasm music. It was dubbed over the Gangsta's Paradise, which was actually playing. I think the most hilarious thing about the Jets is how much they can't get out of their own way because they think it's such a quick fix all the time, right? And it's like, it's not going to work. Like, haven't you learned anything? You're laughing. Like, you can't do it that way. You can't build it that way. Aaron Rodgers, and I'm reading a story the other day about, well, Aaron Rodgers and Garrett Wilson never even got on the same page since training camp. And you know what? If they're going to keep Aaron Rodgers, maybe Garrett Wilson's going to want out. So what do they do? Like, are you kidding me? You keep Garrett Wilson, not Aaron Rodgers? Like, is that even a discussion? But that's how they have thought, I think, in their organization.
I mean, so I love to try to read the body language, and at times that gets me in trouble, but that was just so obvious right away this year with these two. And you know, I'm not always going to be right, but you just never would see Rodgers go up to Wilson after a touchdown pass, even. Like, just, it was much like this when he was with Green Bay. And maybe now they'll hire Rex Ryan back. That won't be funny.
Oh my gosh, Mike. I mean, it isn't, but think about this, Mike. He is the last coach to take them to the playoffs, and they went to two straight AFC championship games.
Yeah, it's very Lindy Ruff.
That's amazing. It really is.
It's all the same year, right? I mean,
yes.
Injury.
You know, so if right now the Broncos, if the if the Broncos, have the second longest drought right now in the NFL. I think it's, seven seasons. If the Broncos for somehow miss it, the Jets will have 14, and I think the Broncos is six or seven. And the next closest will be like more than double that for the next closest. I think it's Carolina, maybe. Atlanta might be in there, but they might make it this year. But that's how long the Jets playoff drought has gone. It would be double the next team who's the longest playoff drought.
Denver's last playoff game was the Peyton Manning Super Bowl against McDermott's Panthers.
Get a head start on 2025 with CNBC's Big January, the hottest tech event, CES, from Las Vegas. The data, the numbers, the jobs report, and meet the future of biotech and pharma at JPM Healthcare. Check out the Amex Golf Tournament from California, Inauguration Day, and the meeting of world leaders in Davos. Plus, the first Fed decision of the year. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
That's right.
It's their last playoff game. Right. So this is the ninth year in a row, if they miss, that they'll have missed. But they have good odds to make it. How about that? 10-point favorite against the Chiefs. I guess we know what the odds makers think Kansas City's going to look like.
Yeah, and Kansas City said they're going to rest their starters. I'm interested to see how that goes for Kansas City. It's not, they have not been this big, well-oiled machine. And yet they're going to take a couple of weeks off here before playing those guys. Now you can live rep practice a little bit. How live you want to go, right? You're not taking guys to the ground and tackling them in big time hits, but you can do that. And I'm sure that's Andy Reid's plan. And I don't want to question Andy Reid; he's amazing as a coach. But I do find it interesting that they're going to go a couple of weeks here without playing their starters after their offense all year has been a bit of a frustration at times.
Bills got out pretty clean injury wise yesterday.
Yeah, Sean McDermott confirmed that today. They got out. He said nothing new to report. He thinks they got out pretty clean. There are some guys with bumps and bruises that'll factor into how they want to play Sunday. But we do know that Josh Allen is going to play. He is going to continue his consecutive starts streak. It's at 114, including playoffs. It'll be 115 on Sunday. And he also said he'll be out very quickly. So that means he'll get in, one play, two plays, three plays, hand off probably, and then, tip of the cap to Mitch Trubisky and probably Mike White.
One more for you quickly, my schedule bro, Sal. So yeah. It's the two AFC North games on Saturday. It isn't quite perfect, as the Steelers' motivation will be different if Baltimore wins the earlier game. What I like about it, and I'd like to run this by you, the Steelers and the Ravens are both coming off long rest, and this shortens that, and they might end up going back to next Saturday. They both could end up playing next Saturday, so this allows the league to not put them on short rest by playing them the Saturday prior.
I like that thought. That's a very good thought. It makes a lot of sense. There are two games on Saturday, Super Wild Card Weekend, three games on Sunday, one on Monday night. I don't love how they've structured this either, because if the Ravens win, the Steelers have, quote-unquote, nothing to play for. But they actually do, because as we pointed out earlier, it could be the difference. Winning the game would be the difference between going to Houston or going to Baltimore, probably, for them. And I don't think they want to go back to Baltimore. I think you'd rather go to Houston, right, to stay in that 5 seed, not drop down to the 6 seed. Mike Tomlin was asked about it today, like Sean McDermott, and said, okay, if the Ravens win, like, do you approach things differently? And he said, he left the door ajar, Mike, but he basically said, like, it's not something they're really thinking about doing. They're going to go out and try to win the game. He said, sure, as things play out, you could think about it that way. But as of right now, he doesn't think that's going to be the case.
I bet Mike Tomlin in his office with his feet on his desk is saying, give me the Ravens. This is what he lives for.
You think so? That's
awesome. If we lose, let's go. If we lose, we'll go back there. We know how to play them. Not worried about that at all. Maybe Houston's definitely a weaker team than the Ravens are. But, man, there's something about that matchup that would make me crave it.
They make those T-shirts that Mike Tomlin, like the sayings, the standard is the standard, and all these different sayings he has. And one of them is, They're a bully, and we love playing the bully. So you're right.
Yeah, there it is. Sal, thanks. Talk to you tomorrow.
All right, you too. Thanks.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline, brought to you by Outlet Liquor, New York's only outlet liquor. Your place to buy a case. What's your outlet? There's your perfect trip if you're the Bills in the postseason, is for Pittsburgh to fall to the 6, lose to the Bengals, and maybe you end up with the Bengals, but it's probably still Denver. And then Pittsburgh takes Baltimore out and then goes to Kansas City, and it's Bills-Houston in round two. Or Chargers. There's your perfect trip. That's your best chance of avoiding the Ravens, in my opinion, if they draw Pittsburgh. 803-0550, what is yours? This is Mike Shope. Football Monday continues on WGR.
You'll see some starters out there playing, and you'll see some other players who we want to take a good look at. So it'll be a blend of both. In Josh's case, one of the things that we know is very, very important to him is his consecutive starts streak, if you will. And it's important to him for a great reason. He wants to be out there with his teammates. And so he will be out there for a very, very short lived amount of time, and then he'll be off rather quickly there.
Sean McDermott, and that is, I think, probably what most of us expected. Cameo, and then to the sideline. Bills and Patriots from Foxborough on Sunday. Bills are still favored at BetMGM by 2.5. It's not like the Patriots need the game. In fact, they could be potentially much better off losing it, given that they right now hold the number one overall pick. It's not going to be the, not that you have to care, the sexiest year for the draft, I think, where you had, like last year, so much fun. You had all these quarterbacks, and almost like there was new drama. It's how the news cycle kind of works. They're always giving you something else to talk about, whether that was Caleb Williams wanting to play in Chicago or May versus Daniels. Is McCarthy worth it? Could Penix or Nix or even both possibly be first-round picks? Answer to most of those questions, yes. And then what happens with Justin Fields and the Bears? All of it was really fun. And this year, I don't think we'll be anything close to that because you don't have the quarterbacks. You have two or three guys that will get some hype for like high first round. And there's, you know, always an argument for trying it. Take this Jets team. I mean, it's not nothing, but how far are you setting yourself back? Let's put it that way. How far are you setting yourself back drafting Cam Ward in this draft and it not working out? You're pushing off. You're like the Sabres. You know, you try it again. You had a high draft pick and you still can't figure it out and you just keep going. But, you know, you do what they did with Zach Wilson is you give up on it after a couple of years and try again. And so that's what you got to do. That's what they would do. The Jets are 4-12, and right now they would pick ninth. Think about that. When would you expect a 4-12, I mean, 16 games, right, most of our lives, a 4-12 team to end up in the draft order, like fifth maybe, maybe at the latest with that record, but not this year. There are, I just had it, 4 3-win teams, and I think 5 4-win teams. New England, Tennessee, Cleveland. Never think about Cleveland in this kind of context, but there they are, losing to Tyler Huntley's Dolphins yesterday. 3-13, New England, Tennessee, Cleveland, and the Giants. This is not the draft order necessarily. 4-12, Jacksonville, the Raiders, Chicago, Carolina, and the Jets. Some of those teams will not be in the quarterback market. I went through this morning checking off teams for who are the teams that are going to, you know, maybe have a new starting quarterback next season. Minnesota made me think about this. Darnold wins again. Another great performance. Dream season, 14-2. Like legit. See the clip of him in the locker room? The team's all spraying champagne all over him, picks them up on their shoulders. How do they dump him? We'll see what happens in the playoffs. It can be too early to say that, even on, you know, New Year's Eve almost. But still, like, the vibes are incredible. They drafted McCarthy in the first round last year, knee injury in the preseason, out for the year. How do you dump him? Still, how many teams in the NFL do we know, the Bills are one, do we know who their starting quarterback next year will be? I believe it's, for me, it's 23. And that does not include the Vikings. We don't know what they'll do. The only three teams in the NFC for this for me were the Vikings, the Giants, and the Saints. Even Carolina, Chicago, Dallas, San Francisco, teams with losing records, Arizona, I think we know who their week one starter is. Not 100%, but maybe like in the case of Dallas or somebody, something shocking happens. I guess it's never going to be that shocking if they ever move on from Prescott, because all they ever seem to do is talk down about him. So three NFC teams, and there are a lot of bad teams over there, are the number of teams where I don't think we know who their starting quarterback is. Giants, no idea. Minnesota, Darnold or McCarthy, and New Orleans could do anything. I don't know about Carr's contract. They're talking about him playing this week, by the way, Derek Carr. AFC, so I've got 13 on that side, 10 on this side, meaning six, I think, are unknown. The Jets, obviously. The Steelers, we don't know. The Browns, obviously, although Watson got his contract reworked, still, I think he's got the Achilles tear. He won't be on the field week one. Indianapolis is iffy. Another Richardson injury. The loss eliminates them. Kind of a lost season for him, for them. Tennessee, no idea. Raiders, no idea. I think it's got to be Lawrence in Jacksonville. I think it's got to be, I mean, the other ones are all easy. Tua in Miami, Drake May. So I don't know other years' numbers of what I would have said last year for this. Last year, though, there was a lot of excitement. All the rookies, the Cousins stuff, where does he go? Justin Fields, where does he go? So what does Chicago do? And on. And I've got nine teams at the most, almost, that I think could have an opening. Some definitely do. A few others are maybe not, like Minnesota. Minnesota's not going to get someone else this year, but we don't know who the starter is going to be for sure. And so what happens to what happens with this? We don't have like a good rookie class. Some of these retready kind of backups are going to maybe be starters for teams. Maybe Levis starting isn't crazy next year. Maybe Trubisky starting isn't crazy next year. I think it probably is. Carr, maybe he starts somewhere. And then maybe one or two rookies. But not a lot of openings is all. That's what this was. Me telling you there will not be a lot of quarterback openings in the league. Minnesota might have the most interesting one. And I think what happens Sunday night against Detroit, and then more importantly, what happens in the playoffs with them, if they go 15-2, beat the Lions, get the one seed, how is he not their quarterback next year? It happens sometimes. You sort of get lucky. You had plans. The kid didn't work out. Here he just got injured, and you end up someplace completely different. Kind of romantic. 803-0550. It is Football Monday. I'm Mike Shope, and this is WGR. Football Monday on WGR. I'm Mike Shope. Thanks for listening. We are brought to you today by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. The Sabres are off tonight. They'll play in Dallas tomorrow night. They took out St. Louis yesterday afternoon, despite being badly outshot. Now the Blues go to play the Sabres' last Friday opponent, Chicago. That was a nice win. At the Winter Classic at Wrigley Field. Tomorrow afternoon at 3. I guess I get it, and I don't want to complain too hard, because who wants to listen to complaining anyway? But too bad that the Winter Classic doesn't rate above New Year's Eve afternoon. Like, these days, look around the office, a lot of guys are taking the extended break, you know? That's what Christmas and New Year's on Wednesdays do. I think they make, if to those lucky enough to be able to pull it off, like the Monday-Tuesday pocket makes for like a 10-day break. That's what Bulldog's doing exactly, which, you know, good for him. But still, the Winter Classic is always fun to look at for a few minutes. I think the spectacle of it is always pretty incredible. The league does a great job with how it looks, the uniforms, and the whole thing. Wrigley Field, all right? I saw the scoreboard today. Buffalo is up there because the Sabres play tomorrow night. You might know how they do it on that manual scoreboard at Wrigley, where it's over there on the side where it says night game, and they put night game in like diagonal formation. So that's kind of unique or unusual. and it looks great, Buffalo-Dallas there on the Wrigley scoreboard. But it's 3 o'clock on the afternoon of New Year's Eve. I mean, not exactly, it's not even the holiday, right? It's not in prime time. It's not even January 1st. So that would just avail it to many fewer eyeballs. And it's too bad. Like, stick up for yourself, Winter Classic. Take the holiday. Do you have any say in this? Do they just tell you when you're going to play this game? It's a Tuesday afternoon where people, you know, theoretically are working. I know there are bowl games, and it's one thing I used to love about these last couple of weeks of the year. It's different now, of course, like everything, but the ramp up to the big bowl games, you know, the idea that they actually mattered. Getting to one was harder. It was more prestigious. Even the mid-December ones were okay. Like late December, not for anything major, but still cool. Teams between different conferences that would maybe have never met. So a unique matchup and something real on the line. And to some, it's still like that, but it's just so watered down. So many more games with ridiculous names and with so much, understandably, but so much more attention poured into the playoff, whatever. You know, these games just do not come close to having the same kind of importance or just coolness that they used to. For the kids, sure. For the schools, sure. But not really. Not for the average sports fan. You can bet on them. That's different than in the 90s or the 80s. But that's about it. I wonder what Saquon Barkley's week will be like, or whether he'll play on Sunday. The Eagles, like the Bills in the AFC, in the NFC, the Eagles cannot move off the two. They lose the tiebreaker to Detroit. And Detroit's going to play Minnesota. One of them is going to get to enough wins to freeze out Philadelphia at 14-3. So it's a meaningless game for the Eagles. Jalen Hurts, injured, did not play yesterday. Kenny Pickett, injured in the game against Dallas, left the game. Tanner McKee was next. So no doubt the Eagles will be very careful there in a meaningless game. Barkley, 2,005 yards now. 100 away from the record exactly, but no bye week. What do you do? How do you decide? I would want to have Barkley in the conversation, but I think there would be a line that I would draw short of hell-bent to get this record. I might give you a half. It's against the Giants. But I'm the one who's going to look like a fool. I'm the coach now in this, okay? I'm the one who's going to look like a fool if anything goes wrong with Barkley. I've already had the Hurts scare here. I think it's a concussion with him. And, you know, it's been a great season, but they're not the only one up there. They're not Kansas City with three rings. You know, Philadelphia is trying to get on the board here also, this group of that team. It'd be very tempting and maybe hard to keep Barkley out of the game against his former team if he wanted to play. You know, you could end up having a problem. And then the perception of it, if something does go wrong, and you might have, in a hypothetical situation like this, the two sides using leaks to maybe make the other look bad. You know, the coach looks like a fool for playing him, but he insisted, and I want to be a player's coach, so this happened. You get into some real tough stuff there. But 100 yards exactly away, very doable if he does play against the Giants. Eric Dickerson, the all-time record, 21-05. I talked to Eric Wood earlier about yesterday's game, about the Broncos, and about holding. He did it. He answered the question, what is holding? Like, break it down. It's so confusing and maddening even to watch during games. Stay tuned for Eric Wood, Football Monday here on WGR.